Welcome back. My name is Alicia.
And I'm Liv. And you're listening to TBR, where we both drink and spill the tea on books from our TBR lists.
In this week's episode, we will be discussing Siege and Storm by Leigh Bardugo, which is the second book in the Grisha trilogy.
It is, and since we're still in search of the perfect tea to encapsulate the Grisha trilogy, we're still drinking Russian Caravan.
We are, but it still tastes as nice as last time.
Yeah, it's fine. It's a nice tea.
Exactly. But if you guys have any suggestions, be sure to let us know on our social media platforms, which are linked in the description, as always.
And like last week, we will be talking about all the major plot points in Siege and Storm, so do with that what you may. Yeah. Keep on listening. Maybe go away and read it and come back.
Anyways, let's get started. Like last time, we will probably do terribly at the pronunciation of names again.
Very true, so we apologise in advance. So let's get straight into it.
Let's!
So, Shadow and Bone finished with Alina and Mal escaping from the Darkling and starting to make their way across the True Sea. Siege and Storm, as the other books in the Grisha trilogy, begin with the before chapter. Again, it's just like a prologue.
Yes.
And we basically find out that Mal and Alina found a ship and crew that were willing to transport them across the True Sea.
While they were seeking refuge.
Yes. Alina is making a lot of the ship's men very wary. The captain kind of blames it on superstition that women on ship are bad luck and it brings ill winds and stuff.
Yeah.
But Alina is pretty empty after the last battle with the Darkling.
I think it was very traumatic for her.
Oh, it would be.
Yeah.
The poor thing. Anyway, so she's super pale and she just kind of stands at the edge of the ship and she just kind of looks out and she's always clutching her neck, which is covered by a scarf, but we know that the collar's under there.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the night, sometimes she'll just wake up screaming.
And waking up the dozing men.
They're scared. I would be freaked out too.
I would be a bit annoyed. Like, come on, man.
Trying to catch some Z's.
Just trying to catch them Z's so I can work the next day.
And Mal is just like chatting away to the other men on the ship.
Yeah, Mal has great bromances with every single person.
I'm just so confused why he's not paying. Like, if I were him and Alina was my kind of but not really girlfriend,
I would try to take care of her.
I'd be with her a lot, just making sure she was okay.
Yeah, me too. Maybe she wanted to be left alone. Who knows? And then we move on to the main body of the text.
Yes, we do. By now, Alina and Mal have left the ship, and they've found refuge in this little town village called Cofton.
Yes.
And I think their house is, like, a little wet. In a hostel, warehouse, motel.
Yeah, it's not very flash.
Pretty dingy.
It's no little palace.
No, it's not.
No.
And I think maybe this is, like, peak Mal and Alina for me. This is the part where I liked them as a couple the most.
Yes, I think so.
They were just kind of doing their own thing, wandering around the streets.
Yeah, peaceful couples who are just content with being each other make me smile.
Yeah.
More than really intense couples who are professing their love to each other every day.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Anyways, so as we know, in Shadow and Bone, Alina was forced to wear the Morozova's collar, which is made out of the deer that the Darkling killed. And they want to cover this up because they really want to go incognito. They
yes.
do not want any special attention drawn to them. They just want to live out their lives as two humble people.
Yes, this did confuse me a little bit at first. So, amplifiers, you can't remove them. Can you?
No, I don't think so.
Because I feel like Ivan had his bear claw on a necklace.
But this is a special amplifier made by the Darkling.
So is it... But is it amplifiers in general that can't be removed? Or is it this one that David has crafted for the Darkling to place on Alina?
I think it's this one. With the full intent that she will not be able to take it off.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
If you do know more about amplifiers than us, please let us know. And make us less confused.
Yes, please.
So, Mal and Alina spend a fair bit of time just living the peasant lifestyle, trying to hide from the Darkling.
Yes.
They
don't do it very well.
No, they're terrible at it.
They're so bad.
It literally takes them less than half a chapter to be found by the Darkling.
Yes. And I thought, when I read this, that I was imagining it. I thought that she had some sort of...
Oh, she's dreamt about it.
I thought that she dreamt about him finding her... Because I was thinking, there is no way that they get found this close. There is no way that the climactic point of the entire book is on page 3. But it was.
I'm just also confused, though, because in the first book, Mal was such a great tracker, and he managed to hide them away from the Darkling.
Yes. In plain sight, too.
Yeah.
And how does he find her?
He uses some creepy-ass shadowy figures.
Yeah, new characters introduced. And these dark shadowy figures attack her. So the Darkling's in control of them, obviously. And
yes.
they capture Alina and Mal. And yeah, we don't really know what happens after that.
Because, again, our gal, Alina...
blacks out.
Loses consciousness.
She does. When in doubt, faint a little bit.
Yeah.
And she's in and out of consciousness during this whole capturing process. They seem to be going on a journey to somewhere. And we find out that she comes in and out of consciousness because Ivan has been slowing her heart rate because he is a heart render.
I didn't realize he was a heart render, specifically.
Me neither. I knew he was Corporal Kai. Yeah.
But I didn't realize he was... an actual heart rend. I'm sure it must have been said in the first book.
Yeah, yeah.
We must have just missed it.
But yeah, he can slow her heart, which I feel like is a very intimate and torturous act, but I don't think she's in any pain, which is interesting because later on she's in a lot of pain. And so basically she's unconscious for a whole week.
That's a long time.
It is a long time.
Especially when you're drifting in and out of consciousness.
Yeah, I just think she has no control. She's literally so weak. There's nothing that can revive her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd really suck.
Yeah. So when she wakes up, they're actually on a ship sailing back to Ravka. And who's there?
Jenya is there. She's like, Alina, do you want food and stuff? And Alina's like, get the hell away from me.
You betrayed me.
Yeah. Jenya did, because Jenya's now working with the Darkling.
She is. And she's actually wearing a red kefta.
So now she's a Corporal Kai. And I am confused.
I thought she was just a plastic surgeon. How can you just become a Corporal Kai?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I think it might be more like an honorary title.
Yeah.
That Jenya's more a soldier now.
Jenya's the most improved certificate that she gets. Or the most enthusiastic player in a basketball team. The coach is just like, there you go. Good on ya.
Yes.
But Jenya seems like she's quite settled with this betrayal decision that she's made.
She knows she's betrayed Alina.
She knows, but she just wanted to fit in so badly. Because in the first book, especially, you can really see that...
she was ostracized so much.
She was, because her status was so low. So now she's moved up the ranks. And I think at this point, seeing Alina, she's probably tossing up whether or not that was a good decision.
It's probably clicked in now that maybe... it was not the right one.
Yeah, because sometimes you make a bad decision, but you don't get to see the consequences, and so it doesn't hit you as much as when you get to see it. So yes, the Darkling is also there when she wakes up, and...
this is obviously because the Darkling is totally in love with Alina. Maybe not in love.
I think he's just very fascinated with her.
He has an obsession with her.
He is obsessed. I think it's more intrigue, though. I think he's more like, how can this scrawny little ugly girl bring me down?
I think he's like, her and I are the only ones of our kind. We're gonna be together forever.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's a bit of, like, a stalker obsession.
Right. Oh, I originally saw it as, like, a keep your friends close but enemies closer kind of thing.
Oh.
Where it's, like, if she also has these really powerful powers and she hasn't even trained and she just defeated me, why not just keep her close so that she can't do anything to overthrow me?
Yeah, but the Darkling knows that the closer he gets to Alina, the more she hates him.
Yeah, but if he just keeps her there, it's fine. It's chill.
Keeps her unconscious.
Yeah. He's like, as long as she can't do anything that messes with my plans, it's fine.
Basically, the Darkling and Alina have a bit of a chat, and Mal comes up in conversation. The Darkling is still kind of hating on him.
Yeah, the Darkling's a bit jealous.
He definitely is.
Yeah.
And this is also where we find out what the shadowy figures are.
They are the Nichevoya, which translates to nothings.
That's creepy as heck.
It is creepy, because they're not nothings, but they are shadowy figures. So technically, shadows are nothing. I know, philosophical. We're getting real educational here.
And then a couple of vague side characters, whomst we haven't met yet, tell the Darkling and Ivan to back off a little bit, because Alina is Sturmhorn's prisoner. And this is also where we find out that the ship they're on belongs to this Sturmhorn guy.
Yes.
And he appears.
He does. And we love him.
We do.
He's very cocky. He's very sarcastic. And a bit flirty.
He is. He's described as having ruddy hair, quite fox-like, a broken nose. I'm not gonna lie, when I first read it, I pictured him as, like, 30 or 40 years old.
Me too. I thought he was so much older, maybe 50.
I thought he was a man.
Man, yes. Because when he said fox-like, I was thinking silver fox. You know?
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, apparently he's not.
No, so the point we're getting this is, during our reread, we realised he's the same age as Alina.
Yes.
And then we get introduced to the side characters from before.
They're cool.
Their names are Tolia and Tamar.
And I feel like they're the comedic relief twins. You know, they are. There's always kind of siblings or twins who are comedic. I'm just thinking of Harry Potter, that's why I'm
They do have
that.
A good sense of humour.
I love them, though. I think they're great.
And we're back in this kind of cabin thing, and Jenya tries to have yet another D&M with Alina, but Alina is not having it.
No.
She's still feeling betrayed.
She is. And she kind of bites back a little bit and stands her ground, being like, you can't treat me like that. I'm not going to listen to you. This is not on. She grows a bit of a backbone.
I'm impressed.
Me too. I was hoping for that in the last book, but yes. Now she's kind of grown into it a little bit more.
Yes. And here's where we get some insight into the Darkling's plans.
Yes. So we find out that the Darkling intends to get another amplifier for Alina. And she thinks that that's crazy.
She literally says, and this is quoted from the book, tell me the amplifier is for some other stupid gullible girl.
Yes, as if she's not stupid or gullible, gets found 3 pages in. Come on, Alina.
Alina!
Anyways, so we find out from the Darkling that there's actually multiple amplifiers, and they're all called the Morozova's amplifiers. Morozova was quite busy. I think it's come back to bite him in the butt now, because all this war is going on, and I don't think that's what he intended. But who knows, we're not personal friends of Morozova. Anyways, the Darkling tells Alina at this point that...
their fates are entwined.
They are.
That's hot.
That's delicious.
I just am so happy.
I love it when two enemies are just connected in a way and one of them doesn't even want to be connected.
They have a deep connection.
They do. It's deeper than anyone can understand. Anyways, the result of the Darklings bringing these amplifiers together would be that Alina will have better control of spreading the fold. Or controlling the Shadowfold.
And by Alina, you mean the Darkling. Through Alina.
Yes, exactly. And we find out that the second amplifier is a sea whip.
Yes, and similarly to the stag, there is a fairy tale behind it.
There is, and it's beautiful.
And the story goes that there was once a cursed prince who was forced to take the form of a sea serpent and guard the water of the Bone Road.
What a nice avenue. He's like, oh, come to my place. I'm just up north. I'm at the Bone Road. They're like, I thought you were at Serpent Avenue. And he's like, nah, man, I'm at Bone Road. But I was thinking when they were telling this story that I wish we got more of the story on the prince. Like, when I read this, I was like, oh, great, we're gonna meet another cursed prince and it's gonna be a great storyline. But we don't.
I think it's just a fairy tale, though.
But they were telling kids that the Morozova's herd wasn't real. You know? Like, it's a fairy tale.
Yeah, true,
so
I guess.
So the prince should be real, and I wanted a really big story with the prince.
And basically, the Darkling tells Mal to track the sea whip. Mal's like, I can't do that. This is literally a mystical creature. And the Darkling says, no, you are going to find it, because every day that you don't, I'm going to peel away a piece of Alina's skin, and then I'm going to get Ivan to heal her, and then we're going to start it all over again the next day.
How big of him to heal her every time?
Chivalry!
I know. Chivalry is not dead. You know? What a gentleman. When I peel your skin back, I'm going to get my boy to heal it again.
And obviously Mal is horrified by this, so he's begging and pleading with the Darkling to give him more time, and Darkling's not really having it. But then Sturmhond steps in again, and he's like, give them a bit more time. So the Darkling, in the end, decides to give Mal 1 week to find a creature no one has ever seen before. So on the 6th day of the week, Mal finally finds a sea whip.
Finally.
I'm so confused.
Me too. What was he doing in the first 6 days?
Well, I mean, obviously tracking it, but I'm just confused how you can track something that no one has ever seen before. I think they mentioned claw marks in the ice thing.
He's a really good tracker. We don't know. We don't know the inner workings of his tracking brain. Maybe he can sense it.
I just do not understand how a regular old guy...
I know. We'll understand it in the future.
Lols.
But yeah, this reminded me of the Christmas song that's like, and on the 6th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me
a sea whip.
Amazing.
Damn.
Yep.
I want me a man who will give me a sea whip.
Same. Everybody else gets a partridge and a pear tree, and he's like, nah, I got you, Alina. I got you a sea whip. I got you a sexy cursed prince that we never get to meet.
So obviously finding this sea whip, the Darkling is super busy and he's trying to capture the sea whip. And this other ship appears out of nowhere and it gets pretty chaotic.
It does. But it doesn't really get a very big lead up or a climactic kind of entry into this chaotic scene. Bardugo kind of just goes for it.
Classic Bardugo.
Yeah, five paragraphs later, I'm like, oh wait, there was a battle.
A huge-ass battle,
too. A huge battle.
And then Tolia and Tamar end up helping Alina and Mal, and they escape.
They're so nice.
And they jump onto this other ship with Sturmhund and the rest of his crew.
Yeah, Sturmhund's like, yeah, let's go. Come on, buddy.
So much is happening and I don't really understand.
Me neither. And I think this is where we realize that Sturmhund maybe isn't as bad as we originally thought, because he just changed his mind all of a sudden.
He's a little bit morally grey at this point.
Yes,
we don't know what his intentions are.
But it's delicious.
So in the escape, Jenya almost shoots Alina. And Alina says, you don't want to do this, Jenya. Jenya realizes, yeah, you're right, I don't.
Yeah, true, true.
And she lets Alina go, which, spoiler alert, she will pay for. So it turns out that Sturmhund has a heap of Grisha working for him. Maybe with him?
Yeah, maybe they're working on something together, but I feel like they respect him a lot, so maybe...
Everyone loves Sturmhund.
He's like the captain. He's the quarterback, if you're American.
Oh my God.
I've heard that the quarterback position is very good. You tell me if that's...
I feel like you reference American football a lot.
Yeah, and I've never watched it.
Trying to stay relevant
I'm
with the kids.
Trying to stay relevant.
And surprise, Sturmhund and his crew also have the Sea Whip, so the Darkling tries to use the Nichevoya and doesn't really work because Sturmhund calls open fire.
He does. And he has a lot of Grisha working for him, so he's very powerful.
Yes. And they escape from the Darkling completely and fully. So good on them.
It was a difficult task.
And once they're in the clear, Alina needs to kill the Sea Whip. She doesn't really want to, but
the
Mal...
Sea Whip didn't give her the look. So she's like, guess so.
Yeah. Might as well.
Sea Whips don't know how to wink.
No. But Mal says, put it out of its misery, and he holds her hands and they kill the Sea Whip together.
Which you'd think is romantic, holding the hands, but I think when you're...
They're plunging a dagger into a sea whip.
Into a cursed prince who's probably quite sexy. So missed opportunity there, Lee Bardugo, but anyways, oh well.
And Sturmhund reveals that he's taking them to West Ravka to a client. So he might not be that trustworthy, but his attitude and personality definitely, as a whole, makes up for it.
Yes, it is refreshing because he has kind of a... let's just get going attitude.
He does. Obviously, he's a bit sad at the moment because I think 13 of his crew died in this battle.
Which is heartwarming because he cares about his people.
Again, very refreshing.
Very refreshing. Very attracted to that.
So this is where we find out that Sturmhund is basically his own player in a game.
Yes.
He originally worked for the Darkling, and then someone else has kind of outbid the Darkling, I guess. So his loyalty's changed.
Yeah, it's whoever the highest bidder is.
Yes. Yeah. So, again, he's kind of morally grey and he really just can't be trusted at this point.
No, he just cares about the money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think captains and pirates or whatever usually do. So it's in character for him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is also when Sturmhund gives Alina this book that he grabbed, apparently, when he was leaving the ship.
Yeah. A bit of an apparat moment.
Funny you should say that, because the book that Sturmhund gives Alina is her copy of Istori Sanctia, which is the book that the apparat gave her, the children's book, back in Shadow and Bone.
Yes, and this is another reason why I thought that Sturmhund was an old man, like a creepy uncle.
Oh, you think like he's buddies with the apparat?
Well, I thought that he was the age of that creepy uncle.
And we get the sense, during this kind of encounter, that Mal, he's pretty jealous of Sturmhund.
He is. And now I understand why, but again, at the start I was like, why are you jealous of an old man?
I think Sturmhund is being nice to Alina, and Mal's like, ooh, any man who is nice to my lady must be flirting.
Yes, and I'm the only one who can be nice to my lady. Everyone else has to mistreat her.
Mal!
Come on, Mal.
Why are you like this?
I know, it just goes downhill from here, but anyways...
And that night, Tamar and Alina end up bunking in together, and Tamar says, the tracker is handsome, and Alina's like, oh yes, yes, because we all know that every single girl in the Grishaverse is in love with Mal.
Yes, for some weird reason. Like, I get it, but I also don't get it. So Alina's probably quite used to hearing about how hot her boyfriend is.
Probably. And then Tamar goes, he's not really my type, though.
And Liv and I thought, we love you, Tamar.
We do.
We're obsessed with you because we agree.
Yes, but Alina obviously is really confused, and she's like, why would you think that? My man is the hottest man ever alive.
Yeah, she got some rose-tinted glasses on. Anyway, so later when Alina reads the book that Sturmhund gave her, she finds out that there are not two, but actually three amplifiers. There's the stag, the sea whip, and a firebird.
So after this realization, Alina keeps it to herself a little bit, and I think she meets up with a fabricator who ends up turning the sea whip's scales into a feta around her wrist.
A little nice bracelet.
I was very confused what a feta was
when I was reading that it was a bracelet.
Maybe it's a cuff.
Maybe.
And everyone kind of gives Alina the go-ahead to test her powers now that she has two amplifiers. And everyone's a bit wary. Well, not even wary. I guess they're really intrigued because they don't know what's going to happen because no one's ever had two amplifiers before.
No.
And she draws her sunlight. It literally explodes everywhere. There is so much sunlight and everyone is shook. And I'm pretty sure the crew, like, ducks to take cover.
Yeah, they were very intimidated.
Yes. And she, I think Alina's a little bit overwhelmed as well. And Mal is terrified.
When is Alina not overwhelmed?
True.
She's always like, oh my gosh, I have this power. I'm like, you're wearing an amplifier. What did you think was going to happen? Like, seriously, that it was going to just come up from your wrist and start swimming? Like, no, Alina. You're very powerful now. Anyways, Mal doesn't have the best attitude towards it.
No.
His attitude deteriorates throughout this entire book. He just doesn't understand or accept these powers that she has.
No, I think maybe even Mal's a little bit jealous. I feel like that he and Alina had something in common that bonded them together.
Yeah.
And now that Alina's Grisha, he's kind of seeing the divide between the two of them. And I think he's a little bit jealous he's not Grisha, but he also might just be a little bit sad that this bond they had is gone.
Yeah.
So, as they mentioned before, they are heading to West Ravka, and as they're about to go ashore, Sturmhorn's ship casually flies into the air.
Yeah, it's an aeroplane now.
Because why not?
Why not?
And turns out Sturmhorn kind of has a thing for making flying ships.
Why didn't they just fly the whole time?
I don't even know. I guess maybe he wanted to keep it as like a backup plan.
That's true. Keep it incognito.
Anyway, Alina's absolutely terrified. Planes obviously weren't around.
In Russia, 1800s, no. Safe to assume that they were not around.
Yes. And Alina is terrified. Mal seems like he's having a great time.
He does. He thinks it's a nice little hot air balloon ride.
Yeah, he's looking at the view. He's like, Alina, come and look at this.
How beautiful. And it's the moment where it's like, Alina's like, wow, it's so beautiful. And he goes, I'm looking at the most beautiful thing.
Oh, no.
But it's not, because Alina's probably throwing up with air sickness. And Mal's like, it's beautiful. I love the view. Anyways.
And Sturmhorn kind of does a U-turn. Everyone's like, where are you going? And he takes them to the Shadow Fold.
That's rude, Sturmhorn.
It is a little bit.
What are you doing? We do not want to go back there.
And things get messy. Basically, they have a massacre. And
another fight that I didn't even realize was happening.
And they kill some Volkra for funsies.
Yeah, for funs. Couples who kill Volkra together stay together.
But, of course, things go wrong.
As they do.
Alina sees the Darkling in the Fold. No one else does, though. So,
that's
I guess
a bit awkward. It's a
it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess it's just a hallucination. And things go to hell because Alina has kind of stopped using her light to keep the Volker at bay, and the ship ends up crashing.
Yeah, because the Darkling's vision really distracted her.
It did. And guess what? Sturmhorn's face changes.
Not because of Zhenya.
No.
No.
He gets handsome.
He does.
Like, super handsome.
Like, so handsome.
Now he has dark gold hair with bright hazel eyes. I imagine him with a bit of a smolder.
Yeah. I just love him.
Turns... You've got the giggles. You're a little bit overwhelmed now.
I am. I'm getting shy.
Turns out he was using a disguise because the Darkling saw him when he was younger and he didn't want to take chances.
No.
So we're wondering who is Sturmhorn, actually.
We do, and we find out very soon, because Mal's like, who are you?
Mal has the same idea as us.
Yeah.
And he runs out of time to tell them, because a bunch of soldiers show up, and they're, like, threatening them. And, plot twist, Sturmhorn is actually Nikolai Lantsov, the youngest prince of Ravka.
Yes! In the first book, you saw that they were discussing the youngest prince being called a Sabachka, which means puppy.
I did not see that coming.
Neither.
Alina kind of makes the connection here, and she goes, okay, so Sabachka is puppy, we know this, and Sturmhorn is Stormhound.
So maybe he wants to be a hound instead of a puppy. He wants to be stronger. But then Nikolai's like, nah, it's actually not.
And Nikolai tells the soldiers that he's brought the Sun Summoner home. And Alina punches him.
She does. The best sexual tension you can have.
It's amazing. I love it.
Same.
She's just not happy with the deceit and the lies, and she straight up gives him a right hook to the face.
She's so frustrated because she thought that he was on their side, and then he gave her up for stuff, and then he's protecting her. It's all very confusing and frustrating. So the only way that you can take out your frustration is just by punching the very, very sexy man.
Disclaimer, we do not recommend punching sexy men if they ever annoy you.
No. Don't try this at home, kids.
Yeah. And this is also where Mal admits to being jealous. And I'm like, oh yes, we love some jealousy. We love some passion.
Yes.
But no, Mal is just jealous because Alina got to punch Nikolai and he wanted to be the one to do so.
Yes.
Mal needs to get his priorities straight.
He does. He does.
He's not concerned about this super handsome prince that has been, like, low-key flirting with Alina the whole time.
No, Mal is so clouded in his jealousy, insecurity, and I think Mal's been through it too, so I get it. But come on, Mal.
Yes. And Nikolai explains that he's really trying to help his country, so he asks Alina to come back to Os Alta with him, because she is Ravka's only hope at this stage.
Yeah, Alina's the chosen one.
She is. And Nikolai wants Alina to unite the First and the Second Armies.
Yeah, that's his master plan. That's his vision.
It is. And this is also when we get a little bit more sense of what the First Army is. So we know the Second Army is the Grisha, but the First Army is, I'm pretty sure, just regular men, and they are like actual soldiers.
Yeah, they know their stuff.
Yes, they fight the actual wars.
Botkin would be very proud of them. Botkin wishes.
And furthermore, Nikolai wants to convince his older brother Vasily to step aside so Nikolai can become the king and Alina can marry him and become queen.
Which is our two favourite tropes mashed together, because at the moment they're kind of like enemies to, well, hopefully to lovers.
Forced into a marriage.
Forced into a marriage, which is my favourite trope. So this is the perfect time.
It's a little presumptuous though that Nikolai is like, yeah, she's totally going to want to marry me after I just low-key betrayed her.
Yeah, and I'm confused as to why he's so sure that she would, because he knows everyone calls him puppy. If you know that people are laughing at you, why would you just assume that someone would want to marry you?
I don't think they're laughing at him. I think they think he's cute. But moreover, Alina is obviously in a relationship with Mal.
Yeah, I don't know if Nikolai just didn't sense that. With Mal probably seething and shaking next to him, like, staring daggers at him, and Nikolai's like, is your friend okay over there? And Alina's like, that's my future husband. And he just blacks out. He's like, no, you're my future queen. I'm your future husband. Don't joke with me, Alina. Anyways, Alina agrees to go with him to Os Alta, but she doesn't want to marry him.
Instead, she wants to take the Darkling's place and lead the Second Army. And Mal is still a little bit salty because Alina wants to find the third amplifier, but he doesn't want her to because he's afraid of how it'll affect her as a person.
Because two is already a lot.
Too much power is a dangerous thing, we see that with the Darkling. And this is kind of also where we find out that the entire country of Ravka is calling Alina a saint.
Which is no pressure, but you gotta save us now.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
It is.
And, again, people are trying to sell her bones.
Yes. And Alina's like, I'm not dead, guys. I'm literally here.
I told you this in Shadow and Bone.
Yeah,
come on.
I literally told you this a few weeks ago. I'm still alive. Do I still have to keep up to date on my Instagram to let y'all know that I'm still breathing?
Still posting photos of her as Mal, but this time they're actually a couple, not just a couple of besties.
And Nikolai's just in the background like, yo.
Photobombing.
Photobombing.
And basically, Nikolai puts forward the idea that Alina should have a personal guard to protect her, because obviously she is Ravka's last hope.
Yes.
And Alina and Mal end up having a bit of a private chat about it, and we find out that Mal wants to be the captain.
Captain of protecting your girlfriend.
Alina's capitan.
Yeah.
And she ends up saying, sure, and I'd also really love it if you could ask Tamar and Tolya as well.
My best gal, my bunking buddy, and her twin brother.
I really love Tolya.
I love both of them. I think they're great.
They are.
And Mal just basically loses all personality. He's like that boyfriend that doesn't know what to do when his girlfriend's not around. Don't you think so?
Yeah.
He just sits there playing on his phone, but also texting her at the same time, like, when are you coming back? Your friends are scaring me. Anyway.
And they travel for a while. It's a bit of a montage, and they eventually arrive at Os Alta.
Mm-hmm.
And they get off the ship thing, whatever they're on. flying ship thing.
The hot air balloon without the balloon.
And Nikolai is playing the crowd a bit. He's like, you know, he's kissing old ladies' cheeks. He's shaking people's hands. He's smiling at people, winking.
Yeah.
He's gone for it. And then Nikolai says to Alina, please don't punch me. And then he kisses her.
I love it. But also, consent.
I'm in love.
Yeah, he's doing it for the crowd.
I've ditched the Darkling. I'm completely Team Nikolai now.
Oh, I love Nikolai. I am completely Team Nikolai. I wasn't even that obsessed with the Darkling just because he was a bit misogynistic for my taste.
But oh, Nikolai, I was.
I know you were, Nikolai. I love you.
He has my heart.
He does.
Yes, and this is when this was the turning point for me. I realized I was in love at this point.
This is not my turning point yet, just because he kind of forced himself on her, but I get it. He really wants the people to believe in her.
And Alina does not punch him. No. She just kicks him in the shin.
Even better. She knows self-defense. Botkin's karate classes really helped her, I think.
You think they did karate in Russia?
Yeah. They were influenced. Multicultural. Anyways.
Fast forward and they have arrived at Os Alta. And Alina, not sure how she got it, but she gives Mal a little pin, being like, this is for you, captain of my guard. Because Alina really doesn't want her personal soldiers to look like the Oprichniki that the Darkling has.
No.
She doesn't like the uniforms they wear.
No.
So she's opted for pins instead.
Yeah, Alina has taste.
And Mal, being Mal, is like, is this all? I thought I was promised a cape.
Oh. Mal wants a kefta.
Mal does. I'm telling you, I think Mal's jealous. He wants powers.
He wants to be Alina.
He
wants the kefta. He wants to match with the Darkling. He wants to get kissed by Nikolai.
I want to be kissed by Nikolai.
Same, don't we all? Anyways, then we bump into someone.
We do. Fedyor.
Yes.
He was only briefly in the first book.
Yeah, he was with Ivan.
Yes. He's a good guy now. And he has a little bit of a chat with Alina about where his loyalties lie. And he ends up leaving, but he finishes saying, Da, Sovereignty. Which, in the Grishaverse, the word Sovereignty is derived from sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
So he's basically saying he gives Alina utmost respect and she's at the top of the hierarchy, really.
Yeah, he sees her really highly.
This is a big point. And then we meet Vasili, and he's pretty annoying and quite stuck up.
Yeah, I feel like he could be charismatic if he was just less arrogant, but he's a first child. He was raised to be king, you know, so his parents probably were like, you're great, Nikolai, you're not.
True, and Nikolai, I guess...
Nikolai, clean your room. Vasily, you're doing great.
And I guess there's all those rumors about Nikolai being the bastard born.
Very true, and Vasily's like, my mummy and daddy wanted me.
And as they're walking through Os Alta, Alina observes that there's no pilgrims or anything, and we basically find out that the king had the apparat declared an apostate and all of his followers banned from Os Alta. And then they go and see the king and the queen. The king and the queen are immensely happy to see Nikolai.
Because Nikolai's great, but also...
They haven't seen Nikolai in a long time. He's been off training with the military.
He has.
And Alina kind of pleads her case to the king, saying she really wants to lead the Second Army and stuff. Mm-hmm. And to start with, the king is very hesitant and he's not really vibing with that suggestion.
Yeah. And then, a little sidebar, the king also wants to hang Mal. He's like, sounds great, Alina, I don't think so, but also I want to kill your boyfriend.
Yes, because Mal deserted the army, and that usually, the response to that is usually a hanging offence.
Yeah, they hunt them down.
Yeah.
And kill them.
But Nikolai basically convinces the king not to, so the king pardons him.
And now while things are getting settled, we get a sense of who stayed and who sided with the Darkling. So a lot of the Corporalkai are gone, but we still have Sergei, Nadia, Mary, David, and Zoya, our favourite gal.
I gotta say, I am confused about David being here. I feel like because he was with the Darkling when they were capturing Morozova's deer.
But David doesn't have many opinions. I think he just goes where everybody else is. And he's like, my friends are gone, I guess I should go with them.
I know, but I just feel like the Darkling would not have let David get away that easily with it. Because David's the best Materialkai out there.
Yeah, he is. Maybe the Darkling liked David. Anyways, it's very ambiguous as to how David even escaped. Because you'd think that the Darkling being so powerful, he'd just hold him back.
Yeah.
Anyways, Zoya, surprisingly, was the first to really support Alina in being the new leader of the Second Army. Even though they were enemies in the first book.
Yes, and I think, I mean, we get the sense that they're still enemies, but Zoya, she's got a plan.
Yeah, she's rational.
Yeah, and people really don't want to follow Alina, and they basically have a dig at her for, pretty sure they say that Alina's the Darkling's bed warmer and yeah. stuff like that. Like, they know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Insulting.
So people are feeling a bit wary about letting Alina lead the second army. The Darkling is obviously a baddie now. If Alina has been sleeping around with the Darkling...
Her loyalties.
Yeah, where do her loyalties lie?
Yeah.
And I think that's why they're hesitant. Alina, with her newfound badassery, uses the cut on the roof.
Yeah, she's like, you know what's funny? Hi-ya! She just does she it. She is.
And people are terrified.
Yes, but I think also a bit impressed.
But mostly terrified.
Yeah, mostly terrified. And so after that, we just kind of skip through to Alina staying in the Darkling's quarters.
That's interesting.
It is interesting. What a sexy time.
Well, you just would have thought that Alina would get her own room now.
Yeah, but
instead,
no.
She just moves into the Darkling's old room.
Yeah, they're like, we got a spare room. One of our sons just moved to college. Come stay with us.
Oh, that's like so that weird.
So weird. But anyways, she then has a vision about the Darkling.
She does. And she's like, you know, it's fine. He can't touch me. He's a hallucination. Don't worry about it. And she just keeps on like chanting to herself, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Because he's not real.
And then he touches her.
Yeah. Not like in Shadow and Bone where he did a little thigh touch. This is, I think he touches her cheek.
Yeah.
And she's terrified. And she lets out a big old burst of sunlight. And Tolia, Tamar, and Mal rush in. And they're like, oh my god, what happened? We saw so much light. And Lily goes, huh?
Just wanted to let it out for the day, you know?
Yeah. So fast forward to the next morning, there's some beef going on. Because Alina decided she wanted to make a council of Grisha and have two representatives from each order. But I guess the drama is because some people think that the Corporalci have more military experience and therefore they should be more fairly represented on this council.
Exactly.
And I think the main instigators of this idea is Sergei and Fedyor. Obviously they're Corporalci and they want to defend themselves a little exactly. bit, I think. And Zoya's not really happy with that because she thinks... This is a really refreshing start to including more Grisha from different orders.
Yeah, she agrees with Alina's vision.
She does. And Sergei is gobsmacked because he's saying, Alina, you're really going to throw away hundreds of years of tradition. And Alina kind of goes, huh, yeah, I am, actually.
Yeah, because obviously something's not working. So.
Yes. And then Nikolai rocks up and he, Mal, and Alina talk a bit about strategy. And Nikolai suggests that he thinks that maybe the Darkling is in the south and that they should take the war to the Darkling to try and catch him unawares.
I feel like that's what Leigh Bardugo does to us. She, like, doesn't even warn us about an attack and it just happens. And then afterwards you're like, I was just attacked. That's hectic. So Alina goes and visits her best friend, Bagra.
She does. And we find out the Darkling has blinded Bagra.
Which is so rude because that's your mom. How could you do that?
I guess the Darkling, though, is a little bit misguided.
And probably felt a bit betrayed. Like, Mum, why did you side with my girlfriend instead of me? And she's like, because you're...
More like my ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, that's true.
Soz Darkling.
How could you side with my ex? Anyways. The Darkling was salty, blinded his mum. And Alina also sees that with Bagra is a little boy.
And I think it's probably because now that Bagra is blind, she needs some assistance around the hut.
She does. And this boy is trying to help her.
Yes.
And is basically her personal assistant.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Bagra, in classic Bagra fashion, is pretty salty because Alina didn't run away like she should have. And Bagra also notices that Alina has two amplifiers.
And she's like, stupid girl.
Yeah, she is. She goes, why would you do that? Because once you start getting all this power, remember, like calls to like, and you're never going to be able to stop, and you're going to go crazy.
Yes, it's going to overwhelm you, and Bagra also feels that Alina is probably not ready for all that power.
No one's ready for all that power. There's a reason why you're only supposed to have one amplifier.
Exactly, but they found two. And...
There's more war talk in the war room, but good news, Botkin is back.
Our best friend Botkin. Where there's Bagra, there is Botkin.
And... I'm just so, I don't know why I didn't really pick up on it before, but Botkin is such a weird dude. And I feel like Botkin is portrayed as speaking like a stereotypical Russian person.
Yes.
And it just confuses me because everyone else speaks regularly, whereas Botkin literally speaks in third person.
He does.
Here is a quote I've taken from the book, and I would like to recite for you. Botkin can teach anyone to fight. Taught a little girl to fight. No? I just don't understand.
Me neither.
Maybe he's from a different section of Ravka and where it speaks a different language.
Maybe. Or Bardugo was trying to give us the vibe of Botkin, which is he's a bit off.
I just thought it was very strange that he even speaks in third person.
Yeah, me too. Anyways, then Alina has a bit of a chat with David, because David did kind of betray her and put that whole collar on her. And it turns out that Morozova didn't find the amplifiers, he actually made the amplifiers.
Yes, so everyone before was under the impression that Morozova discovered all these amplifiers.
Yes.
It's just not the case now.
No. And so after this, Alina hangs out with Mal a little bit. They have a bit of a boyfriend-girlfriend time, but nothing saucy, just they're literally just hanging out. And she bumps into Vasily again.
Turns out he also wants to marry Alina.
Everybody just want a piece of Alina.
Vasily just really is creepy, I find.
He is the one that's really entitled and believes that anyone would be lucky to be with him.
I feel like he has really greasy hair. Like, slicked back, you know?
He does. And this quote that's coming up makes me just cringe.
He took my hand and pressed his moist mouth to my knuckles.
Moist.
Moist. No.
No, Vasily, that's not the way to please a woman.
And in classic Bardugo style, we get another montage kind of sequence.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more war planning, bit of chatting to Nikolai, training with Botkin. And during one of the sessions with Botkin, Alina ends up recruiting Nadia's younger brother, Adric. And I guess it's kind of unusual because he's in school at the moment.
He is.
And school kids aren't really allowed to fight in the armies until they're older.
No, but he really wanted to.
Nadia doesn't want him to, though.
Well, she's his sister. And this is kind of where we start to get the idea here that darkness is growing inside of Alina, and she's kind of battling with this darkness.
She is. She's kind of beginning to have this obsession with the third amplifier.
Yes, she feels a draw to it.
She's getting pretty angsty about it.
She is. She really needs it to kind of complete this whole trinity.
I'm getting a bit concerned about Alina here.
Yeah.
She was a little bit weird before, but I'm worried she's going to go off the rails.
Yes, I feel like it's all going to overwhelm her. And so they decide that they just want a little bit of chill time. They want to wind down a little bit. There's been a lot of training happening. There's been some tension. Be nice to go to a party and hang out with your new friends.
Yes, and I think Mal and Alina end up sneaking off a little bit. I think they're hoping for some saucy alone time.
I think Mal was, and Alina's like, yeah, let's.
That does not happen.
No.
Because some randos end up kind of bumping into them, and Alina pretends to be a fortune teller.
She does.
And she kind of adopts Bodkin's accent.
Yes.
And she's like, you marry ugly man. And this woman is horrified. She's so upset.
She is. Imagine giving someone bad news like that. I'd just be like, you're going to find the love of your life tomorrow.
Well, I think she does, but then she, like, follows up being like, ugly.
Anyways, that's what we think the accent's gonna be.
And then things start to get messy because there's a fight that's broken out in one of the tents or something.
There's always a fight.
Of course. And then they end up having to flee. And on their way out, they run into the creepy apparat dude.
Yes, the uncle. She's like, hey, how you going?
And it turns out he's been spreading the rumors that Alina's a saint.
Yeah, he's been gossiping a little bit.
He has been. And he basically asks Alina to come with him and she can get stronger and lead the people.
Yes, and she's like, no, thank
you. I'll take a fat pass.
Yes.
But he does claim that he has information on Morozova and Morozova's journals.
Yes. But she leaves anyway. She's like, nah, I'm not really interested. I just want to get out.
Yes.
And Mal just turns into this little whiny bitch. It's really annoying.
He does.
Sad. It's disappointing.
Theoretically, I think he has good intentions. Like, he wants to make sure she's okay and stuff and saying, I really loved who you were and everything.
Because he could protect her.
Yes, but now he's just really complaining about Alina having powers.
Yeah.
And he goes to kiss Alina. And she has another hallucination of the Darkling.
Yes. So she obviously flinches away because he's not her type.
And Mal is not happy. No. And he says, I know you haven't had much experience, but I've kissed enough girls to know what that means. That being flinching away.
Yeah.
Fuckboy Mal is back.
He is. That's kind of disrespectful and insulting. No girl wants to be like, I've had so much experience and you're not it.
Mal's making some questionable life choices.
He is. It's because he's frustrated and he doesn't know how else to take out that frustration. So he just insults her instead.
Yes. Fast forward, more of a montage. War planning, Nikolai being just fabulous.
He is.
And, you know, Alina has a bit of a chat to David sometimes. We get the impression that David does actually like Jenya.
Yeah.
He's got the hots for her.
He does.
And then one night, Mal is drunk and he's being a complete dick.
He is.
And then, I don't really know how it happens, but Nikolai and Alina end up sitting on a pier together, just chatting.
Sexy.
Yeah. I'd love to sit on a pier with Nikolai Lantsov.
Oh my gosh, I want to sit on Nikolai Lantsov. I want to tell him what I want for Christmas, which is him. Anyway.
And they have a bit of a moment, and he tells Alina he wants to kiss her again.
This is my favourite quote in the entire book.
Yes, please and thank you. But he does not. And here is why. Mm-hmm. Nikolai says, I want to kiss you, but I won't. Not until you're thinking of me instead of trying to forget him.
And this is where I fell in love with him.
It took you that long?
But properly, because at first he was kind of forcing himself on her, but the respect and the confidence and the assertiveness, but also just, he's so gentle and he's asking for her consent. It's so nice. I love a respectful boy. So Mal's still an asshole through this.
So one night Alina is asking Tolia and Tamar where Mal is. Mm-hmm. And they say, it's pretty irrelevant. And she goes, no, take me to him.
Yeah.
So they take her to the stable where Mal is fighting Grisha.
Just for funsies, apparently.
Apparently. He's drunk. Mal quickly is becoming one of my least favorite characters.
I think he just is so frustrated and he doesn't know what else to do with himself and he feels useless and...
He's a lot like Alina at the start of Shadow and Bone, where she arrives at Os Altar and she doesn't really fit in and stuff.
But Alina doesn't start no fight.
No, but Alina also does have Grisha powers. Mal has nothing.
Yeah, and he's off fighting with Grishas.
Yes, but I guess he's trying to find a purpose.
Yeah.
Because he's good at fighting.
He is very good.
And he wins a fight. And Zoya runs up to him and flings her arms around his neck and kisses him. And at this moment, Alina's like, please don't kiss her back, please don't kiss her back, please don't kiss her back. He does.
Yes. They're in a relationship. They're in a committed relationship. And he's off kissing some other girl, Zoya.
And they finish up having their little moment. Mm-hmm. And Mal makes eye contact with Alina.
Yeah, he sees her and he's like, damn it, I'm in the doghouse tonight.
Yeah.
I'm in the Sabachka house tonight.
And Alina runs off, Mal follows her. They fight, and Mal does more complaining about him being common, and he just wants the normal Alina back. But I just don't think he realizes that normal Alina
was weak and really oppressed.
Well, she's someone of the past. Alina has evolved since then.
She has. She's grown up, and she's gotten a backbone, and Mal's kind of stayed in the same place and probably gone backwards in confidence.
I think he's in love with the idea of the Alina from the orphanage that he grew up with.
Yes.
The one that needed protecting.
The weak little lamb.
Yes. And this is also when Alina tells Mal that she's been seeing the Darkling.
Which is probably not a great time for it. But no, anyways.
Prob's not. But Mal skedaddles out of there.
He does.
He literally says nothing. He just leaves. And I just feel like that was not a cool thing to do.
When you pent up feelings, it always ends in either an explosion or just a breakup.
Alina's obviously feeling very vulnerable at this point.
I think she was sharing something with him and he just was not receiving it the way that she wanted him to.
No, it would have been nice for him to give her some support.
Yeah.
Classic Alina fashion, she's gone to sleep crying again.
Yes. Thinking about Mal.
Oh, Alina, no, we were making progress.
Mal's right next door, you don't need to do that.
And then, so she wakes up to the feel of someone kissing her. And she's like, oh my god, my boy Mal, he's back. He's like trailing kisses down her neck and it's a little bit saucy.
It is.
And she opens her eyes expecting to see Mal's. No.
It's not Mal's.
It's the Darkling. And Alina is losing her shit here.
She is.
She decides to run away and she leaves the city gates and she almost gets attacked by all of these people who are throwing themselves at her. Because they've realized she's Sancta Alina.
It's like a celebrity when they come out of a hotel room. Exactly. The paparazzi want a piece of her.
And thank goodness, Tolia and Tamar save the day. And Tolia is so pissed at Mal. Because apparently Mal was supposed to be guarding her door that night. And he should have stopped her from running away.
He was a bit salty, so he's like, oh, she don't need no protection. She's a saint.
Tolia literally tries to choke Mal.
Bit of sexual tension there.
The tea. And the next morning, they've kind of put it in the past a little bit. I think Mal's still a little bit quiet because he knows he screwed up.
Yeah, and I think Alina's like, there's a bigger picture than me and my boyfriend's fight.
Very mature of her.
Very.
Not what I was expecting of Alina.
No, neither. I thought she was just gonna cry all day thinking about Mal, who's right in front of her being all mopey.
Yes. And basically, I think they're war planning, and they come to the conclusion that the Firebird might be near where Alina grew up.
Yeah.
And Mal volunteers to track it.
Good boy.
No one really cares what Mal does.
Mal's
they're like,
I will stand in, and everyone's like, good on you, none of us can do it, so.
He's like, yeah, seems legit, he's a tracker. Sure, let's send Mal away.
Yes.
I mean, Alina probably does care a little bit. Everyone knows Mal is being a whiny little bitch.
Yeah, so they're like, it's time for you to go for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Take a little holiday.
Yes. So, I think he's preparing to leave.
Yeah.
And Nikolai's birthday comes up.
He's a birthday boy.
Yay! He'd get a birthday kiss from me.
Yeah, same. I want a birthday kiss from him, anyways.
And
I envy those old ladies that he kissed when he first got back. Anyways.
Alina and Nikolai are heading to the party together, and we learn that Vasily is incredibly stupid.
He is.
Because he has made a deal with the Fjordans.
Who are the enemies.
In the north. And they've opened up the roads, which means that potentially the Darkling might have access to it and could be on his way.
Very stupid. Very stupid.
And guess what? He actually is on his way.
He is.
And the Darkling, with the Grisha he's recruited, and also his Nichevoya, attack the palace.
They do. It's kind of like speaking of the devil.
And he shall appear.
He does.
And in this big old fight, Nikolai's brother gets attacked by the Nichevoya, and he dies.
Ugh, that time.
That's a bit harsh.
Sorry. These moist lips just really got to me.
And unfortunately, Marie also dies.
Yes.
And Sergei is devastated.
He is. He's so sad. I think they have more chemistry than Alina and Mal. Very sad. Anyways.
I actually did some research on the Nichevoya.
You did.
Because I was really confused the first time reading this, what the difference was between the Nichevoya and the Oprichniki. Well, here's a fun fact. Turns out there was real life Oprichniki.
Yes.
Like, I'm sure Bardugo derived it from something, but I didn't realise they were actual people who oppressed people or groups who were opposed to the Tsar at the time.
Yes, and Nikolai flees to his flying ship with his parents, which gives me Draco Malfoy vibes. But anyways, and they disappear.
He might be dead. We don't even know. He literally just disappears.
We hope he's alive.
We don't even know for sure that he went to the ship. He literally just disappears.
It wasn't described very well.
No, but he did mention earlier that if there was an attack, he would try and get his parents out via his ship.
That's so nice.
So we can only hope that that went ahead and actually happened.
He's a good son.
So Alina and her Grisha fight this epic battle, and they're at the chapel for some reason. I think they're leading away from the palace.
Yes.
But many young people die, and it's really horrid.
It's so sad.
And whilst they're at the chapel, the Darkling finds them.
Mm-hmm.
And Alina tries to negotiate with the Darkling to get him to let her friends be free.
Yeah, if she goes with him and kind of obeys what he wants her to do.
Yes. Alina, honey, have you ever read a book?
Probably not.
Because
I don't think she's a fan of YA. I think she's into that apparat book that the apparat gave her.
It's just, in literally all books, we know that negotiating with the enemy does not work.
No, not at all.
And, well, true to that, it did not work.
No.
And the Darkling drops his bombshell that apparently all the times that Alina thought she was hallucinating when she saw him, he was actually there.
Yes.
I think it's kind of hot.
I definitely don't. If I was at the toilet doing my number twos, I would not want my Darkling, my ex-boyfriend, to be, like, peeping in.
No, not that. More like that the stuff that went down actually happened. Like the sweet caresses of the face and the, oh, and the little saucy kissing scene.
True, but I would prefer Nikolai.
Oh, same. But I mean,
it's still saucy, yeah, I get it.
I don't like the non-consensual aspect, but I do think the Darkling is hot and I would quite enjoy hooking up with him.
Interesting. Anyways.
And the Darkling also shows Alina that he captured Jenya. And he kind of ordered the Nichevoya to attack her, and now she's not the fairest girl in all the lands.
No, she has scars everywhere.
Yes, and I'm pretty sure she only has one eye.
Yes, very sad.
It is.
And to save her friends, Alina goes to the Darkling and gives her sun powers to him.
Yes. Yeah. And then the Darkling and Alina's powers mix or something, equally confusing, and Alina takes a bit of his power, and I think she tries to go for martyrship. And she ultimately intends to kill both of them.
Yes, she's like, if we go down, we go down together.
Exactly, and she thinks, if I kill myself because of this tether between us, I will take him down and it'll be for the best.
Yes, that's a very common thing that Alina does. She did it with Mal in Shadow and Bone too. She's like, if you're dying, I'm dying with you.
She needs to stop
sacrificing herself. It really gets her nowhere. But anyways.
And I think Mal tries to help, but ultimately he just gets in the way. He kind of grabs Alina and drags her away. They're both super weak at this point.
Yes.
And Alina, somehow still using the Darkling's powers, orders the Nichevoya to take the Darkling down.
Yes.
And they turn on him.
It's very intense. Well, I guess the Nichevoya are controlled by this dark power, so they don't really care who exactly it's coming from as long as they can sense it from someone. They're like, all right, story checks out. Let's just go attack that other guy that we were listening to before.
Yes.
So they escape, Alina and Mal.
They do. And apparently all is forgiven between Mal and Alina now, which I'm not feeling very comforted by this.
Mal didn't even sacrifice himself for Alina. He just kind of called her away. So it's not even like Alina being all, thank you so much for saving my
life.
She's
not a debt to him or anything.
No, no.
He was such a jerk saying that she needed to change for him. Well, not those words, obviously.
But he
insinuated. He said, I don't like who you are now. And Alina just goes with the flow.
Alina just forgave him. Also, he cheated on her. And he got drunk. True. And he was acting recklessly. It's so unforgivable.
I'm just not very impressed with the fact that Alina never, ever brought up the fact that he cheated on her with Sawyer.
Me neither. She has no backbone. I mean, he never was like, hey, you're my girlfriend. But come on, they were an established couple. They'd been together for months.
Oh, definitely.
Anyways, so Alina passes out because she was so weak. And when she wakes up,
they're in some underground tunnels. Turns out that Tolya and Tamar has taken her to the apparat, and they're worshipping her.
They are. They think she's amazing.
Which I guess she was.
Yeah.
But this is also when we find out that Alina's power is gone.
And she can no longer summon the sun.
She can't. Which, it kind of seems like maybe no one else knows this except for Alina.
No, I think she keeps it to herself, because she also doesn't want to disappoint.
I think she tells Mal, maybe.
She should, because he's her bae. But anyways,
well, who knows? Controversial.
Yeah, maybe she should tell Zoya. Zoya supports her all the time, even though Zoya doesn't really like her. But anyways.
And that's how Siege and Storm ends.
Yes, Alina just has this big secret that she no longer has light powers. And that's it.
Apparently so.
Another ambiguous ending.
What were your overall thoughts on the book?
I like how Alina did grow a bit of a backbone, but I was disappointed that she didn't stand up for herself in regards to Mal. I understand that she's in love with him, but it still really, really frustrated me because Mal's telling her all these things like, I'm not happy with this, I'm not happy with that. And she just caters to him completely.
Right.
It's like he's some little puppy that she needs to take care of all the time, but he thinks that he needs to take care of her and that he needs to find things within her to take care of. It was very frustrating for me throughout the entire book.
Yes, I can understand that. I feel like Nikolai really carried the book.
Yes.
I mean, I really enjoyed the book. I definitely enjoyed reading about this journey and adventure that the characters are having.
Me too.
But I just feel like there was a lot more potential, and I guess with all the world building, I guess I'm just a little bit disappointed there was a little bit less character development than I was hoping for.
Yes, there's so much in this world that Lee built so well. She's written it, she's planned it, all the orders, all of the powers and stuff. It was done so well, but I wish she explored each element more instead of just glossing over certain parts and all these characters who could have great personalities. She just never fully developed them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Tolya had more personality than Alina, I felt.
Yes, Alina did seem quite vacant.
Yes.
Maybe vacant isn't the right word to use, but she is just kind of neutral.
She's disagreeable in so many ways, but there's no new suggestions that she's making. She just disagrees with something, like, no, I'm not going to become this person, but she doesn't come up with any new ideas. She agrees with Nikolai about the Second Army, First Army thing, but she doesn't really bring anything new to the table.
I guess she kind of did bring forward the idea, though, about the council.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But
that redeems her a little bit.
That's pretty much the only thing that she really suggested.
Yeah. I also feel like this book lacked a little bit in girl power. I really like it when girls stand together and they, like, fight off stuff.
Right.
But this one just lacked a little bit of that.
I do think it was good, though, in that sometimes when books do have a large emphasis on girl power, it kind of strays away from attracting a male demographic. And I think this book is really suited to both genders. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't overemphasize being a strong, independent female.
Yeah.
It does have a lot of action sequences.
It does, which I also wish was written.
You wanted more build-up to it.
I wanted more of a build-up. I think the battles were written really, really well, and everything was described clearly. It was just the lead-up. Everything seemed like a sneak attack for the reader, which
right, yes. I can completely understand that. Yeah, I just feel like there was... The book had a lot more potential...
Definitely.
And maybe Lee could have touched on that a bit more.
Yes, I agree. So on that note, I think we're going to wrap up this episode. We hope you come back next week for our final episode on the Grisha Trilogy, reviewing Ruin and Rising.
Yes, we hope to see you then. Thank you so much for listening to TBR. Bye!